It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 40. And let me begin, first of all, with an apology. And that is, immediately we put out the podcast last week, I realized that I was saying Steve Brady, not Steve Baker. So apologies if Mr. Baker ever comes across that. But again, I highly recommend the interview that we pointed to last week. Well, this month we're going to go to Japan, California, Africa, America, Sweden, Indonesia, Australia, China. Plenty of places to go, but let's begin with a kind of broader issue. Listen to this fascinating interview about a term I'd never heard before, the splinternet.
The web is changing fast. In fact, it's splitting or splintering. Though she didn't coin the phrase, Professor Dame Wendy Hall, Regius Professor of Computer Science at the University of Southampton, has championed the idea of the splinternet.
We had the original open and free internet that kicked it, got everybody using it. Then we have the market-driven internet in the US, the regulation and data protection-driven internet in Europe, and then we have the surveillance or authoritarian, or some would say paternalist, internet in China.
A clash of worlds.
Okay, the basic theory is this, that the internet was worldwide, but now we've got three main areas. Or three main philosophies behind the internet. So you've got America with the corporate tech giants, mainly California. So let's just call it the Californian stroke American internet. Then you've got China, which is a very state-controlled. So America is corporate, and China is very much state-controlled and social control. And then you've got Europe seeking, I think, to come in between the two in some ways, but basically still having the corporations, but having very much a regulatory framework. And my fear is this, that the internet, which was supposed to be an opportunity for freedom and free speech, in all of these three systems will end up being regulated so that people like yours truly will find it much more difficult to do things on the internet. It was fascinating. Another equally fascinating thing was an article in the New York Times, which suggested that the rich have grown afraid of screens. They want their children to play with blocks, and tech-free private schools are thus booming. Humans are more expensive, and rich people are willing and able to pay for them. The richer you are, the more you spend to be off-screen. Now, in the 1980s personal computer boom, it was the opposite way around. But now the wealthy can afford to opt out of having their data and their attention sold as a product. In Silicon Valley, we mentioned California already, time on screens is increasingly seen as unhealthy. So, as this article concludes, as wealthy kids are growing up with less screen time, poor kids are growing up with more. How comfortable someone is with human engagement could become a new class marker. Unless, of course, they grow up in a Christian home and go to the church, where our kids are taught to interact with one another and with adults. Let's move on to Japan, where Emperor Akihito, the son of Emperor Hirohito, who was the emperor during the Second World War, has become the first emperor in 200 years in Japan to, in effect, to retire. In other words, not to die, but just to retire. His eldest son, Crown Prince Naruhito, has ascended the throne by the time this will go out.
We will start new imperial era of Reiwa, and we sincerely hope the prosperity and peace of new era.
Now, I again read a fascinating article in the New York Times about what happened to Hirohito and Akihito after the Second World War. And one of the interesting questions for me is that Hirohito, a lot of people wanted to try him as a war criminal, but General MacArthur didn't, because he reckoned it would take a million American soldiers, the lives of a million American soldiers, to quell the unrest. But that didn't happen, and Akihito took over, and the emperor continued. Well, we pray for the nation of Japan, and I know that the only way that real peace and harmony is going to come is through the gospel. Also in Asia comes this extraordinary story of the Indonesian elections, where more than 270 election staff have died counting votes. Now, I first saw that headline, I thought it was a joke, but actually, it is the case. And so, there were some 7 million people who were helping count and monitor the 17th of April vote, but apparently the conditions were so bad, the heat and overwork, that 272 election workers had died from overwork-related illnesses. That is just quite extraordinary. But not as extraordinary as this clip. Just listen how this was introduced by Jonathan Friedland.
The world of women's sport is shaken by a fundamental question. Who should be allowed to take part? Should competition include women who were classified at birth as male and who matured as men before transitioning to life as women? It's an issue that is pitted athlete against athlete with the likes of Martina Navratilova, the swimming champion.
It was this phrase that really got me. Women who at birth were classified as male. What? Women who at birth were classified as male? No. They were male. They were born male. They had male chromosomes. They still have male chromosomes. They were male and they are male. Now, they may wish to identify as women, but they were born as male. They weren't classified as male. It wasn't as though, well, okay, let's classify this one as male, let's classify this one as female. That's not how real life, it's not how science, it's not how biology, it's not how sanity works. But in the insanity that's overtaken the Western world at the moment, on Radio 4, it makes sense for a journalist to say, women who at birth were classified as male. What also makes sense is, inverted commas, a woman called Mary, who's actually a man, born as a man, who wrote in terms of world championships, the weightlifting. She's just smashed 4 powerlifting world records and wrote, what a day. 9 for 9 masters, world squat record, open world bench record, masters world die record, and masters world total record. This is great, and so on. I thought this was, you know, from the bottom of my heart, she says, as a transgender lifter, I was unsure what to expect going into this. So you have a man with male testosterone, male chemistry, a male body, winning a women's weightlifting competition, and breaking 4 world records in doing that, receiving the prizes, and I'm assuming the prize money as well. And people say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? It's the destruction of women's sport. As we predicted on this podcast right at the very beginning that this would happen, and people said, don't be stupid. It's the end of weightlifting. What's the point of you doing weightlifting if you're a woman, when a man can say that he's a woman and do it, and with his natural advantages, 9 times out of 10, beat you? It's clear then that we live, surely, in a very confused society. Listen to this in terms of the playwright Arthur Miller.
Well, let's talk to Cindy Tollin. She's co-producer of Miller's play Death of a Salesman, which is about to open at the Young Vic in London. Good morning.
Good morning.
And how do you account for the enduring appeal of Arthur Miller?
Well, I think that when the world is in such chaos that you need a moral compass, you need a guidepost, and that Miller is that guidepost, and that, you know, generations before us and in the future have seen dark times and have gotten through it, and we too can and will get through it again.
Circumstances have changed hugely.
Now, do you see what we're being told? We are being told that our society needs a moral compass and guide. And the playwright Arthur Miller, who was married 3 times, once to Marilyn Monroe, who wrote some brilliant plays. I mean, you have to say that. But as a sure moral compass and guide for our culture and society? Listen, our world, our intellectuals, our elites think that Arthur Miller is the guide to morality. I much prefer Jesus Christ. But maybe we need another moral compass. I've read a couple of articles saying that the 16-year-old Swedish girl Greta Thunberg is the moral compass and the prophet for our nation or for our society. And again, there's no question that she's had a huge impact, but the story is much more complex than that. Now, I've no time at all for people who mock her for her Asperger's or who think that because she's 16, she should easily be dismissed. There's a lot about her that is to admire. However, no, she's not a guide for our nation. She's repeating what her parents have said. She's repeating what her teachers have said. She is not the moral conscience of the world. I loved what was said by Andreas Seemann in this article in The Spectator. Now, forgive the lengthy quote, but it just says it so much better than I could. She says this: "We should not trust Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old Swedish environmentalist who has captured the world's media attention. Don't get me wrong, it's not her motives I mistrust. It is the fact that she is a child who unsurprisingly gives bad advice on complex political issues and, despite her protestations to the contrary, has not done her homework. I want you to panic about climate change," she counsels. "But since when has panic ever been a wise response to any sort of crisis? Panicking, particularly in a supposedly doomsday scenario, almost inevitably produces the most inefficient, wrong-headed, and counterproductive results. The graver the crisis, the more the need for calm." And she finishes off the article. And by the way, there is this panic because, you know, I'm being told, we've got 12 years left. And that's nonsense. "The celebration of Greta Thunberg," Andrea goes on, "and the school strikes is a sign of how infantilized political debate around climate change has become. These five-foot soldiers of the green ideology have been well coached in the language of environmental doom-mongering. What we need now is a more frank, calm, and grown-up debate." Well, I completely agree with that. As a Christian, I think we are here to look after the planet and the environment. But this, what's going on at the moment, is just quite bizarre. Now, I follow China Daily, and that is a mouthpiece for the Chinese government. And they have another suggestion in terms of morality. You know, here we're being told that a 16-year-old Swedish schoolgirl or a dead American playwright. But let's just go back to Karl Marx. That's what Xi Jinping has said. He urged the young Chinese of the new era to establish belief in Marxism, faith in socialism with Chinese characteristics, as well as confidence in the Chinese dream of national rejuvenation. Belief in Marxism. After all that has happened, that is still being said. Do you know, the Chinese government are going to be concerned about the rise of Christianity in China, because it's reckoned that now the number of Christians outnumbers the 90 million members of the Chinese Communist Party. So it's little wonder they're cracking down, because communism is not a secular ideology that is kind of neutral about religion. It is fundamentally anti-religion, anti-Christian. And when Christianity rises up, it doesn't say you should be anti-communist or even anti-capitalist or any particular political position, but it does say that only Jesus is Lord. And in any authoritarian state, that means that you are inevitably going to come into conflict with the state. I'm currently preparing for preaching a sermon on Romans 13, 1-7, and the teaching there that Paul gives is as applicable now in our culture as it was in the Roman Empire in the first century. Okay, let's go on to something completely different, and that is obesity in the city of Leeds in England. Now, this is a fascinating report of a 6.4% fall in obesity rates. It's not massive, but it's statistically significant, especially since everywhere else obesity rates keep going up, especially amongst children. What is even more fascinating is that there's been a 9% drop in the poorer areas in obesity rates.
At the moment, we've just got the figures which say, hey, wake up, guys, something good's going on here. What we now need to do is the more detailed analysis to try to understand the specific things so that other areas can adopt it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you say they've focused on preschools, but doing what?
Well, a whole raft of things, but one of them has been that they do some work through a programme called Henry, which is basically a parenting programme, and it really helps parents right across the city to bring up their children with a healthy lifestyle, to just become more aware of how they can help children to eat well and to be more active.
In other words, duh, from the Christian point of view, parents are the best to influence. Parents are the best to bring up their own children. The state can't do it. Now what's happening here is there's been such a breakdown that the state is now intervening to tell parents to be parents. Well, we could have told you that. And then let's nip over to Africa, where the Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, at least at the time of me recording this, he's still the Foreign Secretary, and he had a fascinating but little reported trip to Africa, including I think Niger and Chad and Senegal, and he's talking about how the after Brexit that the UK wants to be a major trading partner with Africa. For me, that's a good enough reason to vote for Brexit alone, because the EU put up walls against Africa and discriminated against the poor. I know a Kenyan businessman who's absolutely delighted that he hopes to be able to export into the UK, and I hope that happens. But I smiled at this report a little bit because, as well as putting up new embassies in Niger and Chad, an important part of this work, according to the government website, will be the rollout of English language support across Francophone Africa. Just when the Ireland have joined the French-speaking Commonwealth, the Irish have, the UK will fund a new £4 million English language programme in French and Portuguese-speaking countries across Africa. Take that, Monsieur Macron. Let's go to Spain. A couple of things. We'll do the elections in a moment, but in the past couple of podcasts, we've talked about the attitude towards books. And this is what happens in an illiberal society. People burn books. People ban books. And this is what's happening in our so-called liberal society. So, this story from Spain in The Guardian. Several schools across Barcelona are considering purging their libraries of stereotypical and sexist children's books. One removed around 200 titles, including Little Red Riding Hood and The Story of St. George. Oh dear. This is the quote. The type of books children read is very important because traditional books replicate gender stereotypes. And it's good to have books that break these. Estelle Clusella, the head of Fort PN's Parents Association, told El Pas. At the age of 5, children have already established gender roles. They know what it is to be a boy or a girl and what that means. So it's key to work with a gender perspective from the infancy stage. What's going on here is just pure, simple indoctrination and intolerance. Ban books. Ban books that don't agree with the current ideology. Well, I love Spanish and I love listening to Spanish people, and so following the Spanish elections was interesting. I guess the story of the night is simply this. The socialists did well in that their vote increased 3%, but only to 29%. And they had to rely on the collapse of the conservatives because of the advance of the far right.
En el próximo congreso va a haber muchos diputados de Vox que van a representar a muchos españoles que no tenían voz y se va a oír con firmeza y determinación a los diputados de Vox hablar de la unidad de la nación española, de la libertad y de la igualdad de todos los españoles. Muchas gracias.
And I think that actually is the story of the night, because for the first time in the Spanish Parliament since Franco, 24 MPs come from the far right. See, I think what's happening is that the far right are going to benefit from the liberal left, and the two of them feed off one another. Incidentally, it's interesting how the BBC and others, The Guardian and so on, will speak of Vox as being far right, but they don't speak of Podemos as being far left, which they are. Fascinating. how the biases creep in even with this. Speaking of this, I saw some research that the UK could move towards being more authoritarian and more extremist in its politics, and I think that's highly likely. Because, back to this thing again, we don't have a moral compass. You know, Arthur Miller's not going to provide it, Greta Thunberg's not going to provide it, Karl Marx is not going to provide it. And our politicians right now are not going to provide it. And so left and right feed off one another and drive each other to extremes. But speaking of extremes, horrible story of the shooting of a woman, dead and three injured, in a synagogue in California. What maybe went unreported in the mainstream press, but I came across in the Christian press, is a really sad story. The Orthodox Presbyterian Church, which is a sister denomination of the Free Church, and, you know, a great church. But the 19-year-old who did the shooting was an attender. I don't think he was a member. And the pastor says he didn't go to the youth group or Sunday school, but he did attend that church. And he seemed a very quiet and very pleasant boy. And yet, something, and almost certainly through the internet, was feeding hatred and trouble. I mean, I was thinking about this as though I was his pastor, as though he'd come from my church. And of course, people will lay blame. And I don't think people should lay blame. However, I think we should say this, that those of us who are in positions where we teach people, without falling into the banalities of our culture, we need to ensure that we are teaching against the rise of hatred, whether right or left, whatever, whether it's political, whether it's racial, whatever the where it's coming from. How can that possibly be associated with any kind of follower of Jesus Christ? And I think we need to be very careful that we don't demonize groups of people. In this case, this young man had been influenced to think the standard anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic trope. And for some reason, he decided to go and kill some Jews. Unspeakably, unbelievably sad. Well, maybe one other story. No, I'll give you two. Just amazed, going back to books, that a publisher has placed a politically correct warning label on Kant. So if you're going to read Kant, you will get a warning that says this was written in language from centuries ago and you may find some of it offensive and so on. Oh, goodness me. We're infantilizing our students, our young people, and ourselves. One last story. I thought this was fascinating. Qantas, the Australian airline, they have this kind of chairman's lounge where influential people get to go, and you go for free, and you can have a shower, and there's nicer food. It's kind of first class, and you don't pay for it, I don't think, but you're invited to be part of it. And I find this story interesting in two ways. The story is that Qantas have been gradually been moving religious people. Now, it may be because of an anti-religious bias. In fact, I'm sure that that's part of it, knowing Qantas's position at the moment. But what intrigues me is that key religious figures were considered to be significant enough and influential enough that they would be given this kind of pass. Maybe this is a symbolic thing, but maybe this is a good thing, that we don't automatically get invited to go first class. Having said that, when I move out to Australia, hopefully in July, if Qantas want to give me a first class ticket, I'm not going to object. But no, that won't happen, and B, I wouldn't want it to happen because I was a clergyman. That to me, I don't know, there's something profoundly disturbing about that. Okay, if you want to support this podcast, you know where to go, the Podbean fundraiser. Somebody asked last week, who's the rap artist at the end? Well, the band who did the song is called Beautiful Eulogy, The song is called Exile Dial Tone, and it's from their album Instruments of Mercy, and the rapper on the segment that we use is called Propaganda.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge.
Quote of the week, just to leave you with. To be sure, this life is not everything, but it is seldom a medical man has true religious views. That's from George Eliot's Middlemarch. This life is not everything. It's seldom a medical man has true religious views. Too much pride of intellect. You know, I find this extraordinary. The profession in which you're likely to find the largest number of Christians in the United Kingdom is medicine. Well, God bless you and have a good week, and see you next week, and keep those suggestions and news coming in. Bye.
What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah.
Yep. We live in this world not of it, not to be scared and run from it. We shine light in the darkness, that's why he left us here. Calling out to all the exiles, the Lord will not forsake you. His kingdom can't be shaken, hold strong, the end is near. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on. We are the light of the world, so shine on.
Hey, I thought we won the battle, but it really looks like we losing it. What we do seems insignificant, so limited in our influence. They don't listen to our message. We scream and yell it, they say it's irrelevant. It's the greatest story ever told, but a television ain't telling it. So